Welcome to Smart Web Creators. In this podcast, you will listen to creators creating amazing things on the web and sometimes just me talking useful web stuff. I'm your host, Davinder Sinkanth. Let's get started. Content marketing is way more than just writing a blog post content. It involves step-by-step approach, starting from identification of business goals and creating the audience profile. Further, getting started with content planning, publishing, social media presence with SEO in the picture, and possibility of paid marketing. Ben Saylor from CoSchedule shares the processes and tools required for the content marketing circle. This is episode number 32 of the podcast, Creating Content Marketing Plan for Website Clients with Ben Saylor. If you've been enjoying this podcast, please do consider leaving a 5-star review over at iTunes. Just head over to smartwebcreators.com/iTunes. That's smartwebcreators.com/iTunes. For Android users, you can go to smartwebcreators.com/show and find links to Stitcher, Spotify, and other podcasting services. Now, let's begin the episode. So today we have Ben Saylor on the show. He is the content marketing lead at CoSchedule. And surprise, surprise, we are going to talk about content marketing itself. So let's welcome Ben on the show. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Hi, I'm great and glad to be on the show.
Awesome. So we are going to talk about content marketing, which is actually getting more popular, just like SEO, you know, the SEO field, very mysterious field. And a lot of people claim to be an expert, but, you know, there are layers in the whole thing. And same goes for content marketing. There's so many things that form the content marketing system. Before we get on with the topic, why don't you give a quick introduction about your online life?
Sure. So, like you said, I'm currently the content marketing lead at CoSchedule. We create a suite of marketing organization software. But maybe I'll go back to the beginning. You know how I got into the content marketing world. So, I've maintained a side hustle of doing online music journalism for the last 10 or 15 years or so now. And so that was kind of how I got started in creating online content and dabbling with, I got started dabbling in CMSs and WordPress and things like that, and learn some basic HTML that way too, even. And then about 7 years ago, I got my first content marketing job in the industry, working at a mid-sized e-commerce company, which was a great experience. I think, content and SEO in the e-commerce world, you can get so just technical and complex so quickly that it definitely felt like diving in at the deep end of the pool for sure. But I learned so much so quickly there. And then after that, I worked in content at like a mid-sized agency that worked with a lot of manufacturing, healthcare, and financial services clients. Like everything from like small businesses to like global enterprises. And that was a really interesting experience too, just getting this, getting a breadth of experience across a lot of different industries and working with companies of all different sizes from small to large. And then for I started at CoSchedule a little over 3 years ago. And when I started, I was just a content marketer, just writing a lot of educational content about content and social and some, adjacent topics and things like that. And then after about a year, I took over our blog management duties and then Last fall, I moved up to content marketing lead, where I'm now, you know, kind of steering the ship for our holistic, you know, content marketing strategy.
Awesome. Now let's start with content marketing on a very basic level. Like mm-hmm. most small business clients, they're only focused on, you know, getting their website built, and they will add like a bunch of posts, blog posts to their website, and they're done. They hit the pause button. Now mm-hmm. they don't, you know, focus on getting extra expertise on getting the content marketing push. Now, how does one mm-hmm. explain the importance of content marketing to such clients, that small business clients, to help them visualize the possibility of, you know, higher returns as a result of content marketing if they mm-hmm. go for it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question to start with too, because it's a difficult problem, I think, particularly with small business clients and with small websites in general, is a lot of times they don't feel as though they have the resources to devote to content long term. At least in my experience, like from what I've seen. And so they will, like you said, like they'll get maybe just enough content on their site to get started. And that's probably going to be content that's targeting some real like core head terms that they want to rank on, or mm-hmm. things that are the things that are most closely related to their business for sure. But I think like what happens at that point is, or like what I've seen, and I've seen this even with like larger companies too sometimes, is that if they don't see an immediate result from their content, they pull the plug on that investment and they write off content just as a concept, you
know. But it's slow game, right? Just like SEO, it's a slow game. You can't expect immediate yep. results on this, right?
Absolutely. And so I think that the first step in illustrating, you know, the value of content as a long-term investment and building that case is, you know, finding a way to put that into terms that they can understand. Like they've got to get past the fear of spending time and money on something that doesn't provide a return. But you can't get the return until you take the leap and just, you know, start doing it. And it's, you know, and that could mean that maybe it takes 6 months to a year before that content operation is really moving at full speed and it's really driving the return that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so if I were in this situation where I had just taken on a small business client and they are launching a website and they want to put together a content marketing strategy, I think one of the first things that I would do would be to get a sense of whether or not they could be persuaded to invest for the long haul, like straight up right off the bat. Because if they're not, like if they're just committed to just being like, we just want to get this website up, you know, we're not going to keep adding to our blog, we're not going to invest in even in video or maybe even email or some of these other channels, mm-hmm. they might be better off with just building the website and then figuring something else out for building traffic or building like brand awareness. But if the first thing I think to do would be to build the case for content as a long-term investment, and then to actually, if you can, maybe if you have another client where you can show some numbers or you can show some graphs, even if it's like anonymized in some way, but if you can at least like maybe just show like in Google Analytics, this is where they started and then this was where the needle moved after 6 months. This is where they were at after a year. This is where they're at after 2 years. And I like actually show them an example of a company that has done it and has done it successfully. And you can actually like show what the actual business impact is, then I think they will be much more receptive to the idea of being patient with it,
yeah,
and really investing the resources necessary.
Because cost and time, these are the two stumbling blocks when people, yep. you know, pull their hands off from content marketing. So Have you tried any creative ways to convince clients to get on the content marketing thing besides giving them anonymous examples of, hey, this is the brighter picture if you get on with the content marketing?
So, yeah, it's a good question. As far as like getting creative, I think, I don't know how creative it is, but what I find is like it's an emotional hurdle you've got to get past, you know, like the, sometimes like I think that like if you try, I mean, and that's a good point, because I feel like if you try strictly to make a rational appeal to someone saying like, well, these are the numbers, you know, and I've got hard data to show that, you know, this is the way to go. I mean, that's definitely part that needs to be part of the approach. But I think the other part of it is just having like the soft skills, you know, like the people skills to really understand where people's objections are coming from.
Yeah.
So that you can kind of learn to just put things in a way that is going to help that business owner or that website owner, whoever it is, kind of have that light bulb moment where it starts to click. And so I don't know that it's necessarily creative or that I necessarily have any sort of, you know, approach to that is reinventing the wheel in any sense. But I would say that, or my recommendation would be, if it's something you haven't thought about too much before, maybe just kind of considering, maybe just doing some reading or just developing some understanding on what the emotional reasonings are for why people have objections to change, or why they have objections to making long-term investments in things where they don't feel certain about the result. I feel like if you can kind of bring the head and the heart together, so to speak, and if you can kind of do that right off the bat, I think that will set you up. They'll set that relationship up in a way where you've got a good base of understanding of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. I think it can kind of help you avoid some more difficult conversations later when you hit the 3 or 4 month mark and your client isn't raking in the money the way that they expect to be.
Cool. So now head and heart are together and client is convinced. Now let's begin the content marketing journey. Now, what is the first few things that you focus on? Is it like defining the business goals or identifying the business goals or creating the audience persona or profile? What is the first few steps that you take when you begin this journey?
Sure. So I think like there's a lot of things that need to be done early in the process, like all the things that you've just outlined. But when it comes down to prioritizing what's the very first thing that you do, I think the very first thing that I would do would be to actually talk to that business owner and get a sense of what it is they really do and who their customers are, or at the very least who they think their customers are. Because I think depending on how good of an understanding they already have, you may need to do more or less work later, you know, when it comes to, you know, like developing personas and such. So that would be the first thing. I think the second part of that conversation, just as a corollary to that, would be what do they expect content marketing to do in terms of influencing those people to, you know, eventually make a purchase? And what are the, you know, and this is really basic, but just what are the top problems or the top pain points that they know their customers or their potential customers experience? And so depending on what information you're able to extract, you know, from like an initial, you know, like a kickoff call or an onboarding meeting with a new client, depending on what you get out of that conversation, the next step then might be to start, you know, developing a persona like particularly if they don't have a strong understanding of who their potential or who their customers or who their audience is already. And then just making sure that you yourself have a very strong understanding of that business and that industry, especially in, I think the amount of time that you need to spend up front on that research really depends on how familiar you are with those things already. For example, I built a WordPress site, like a really small one for a small business a number of years ago who mm-hmm. run a martial arts gym, like a mixed martial arts gym.
Okay.
And I didn't know that much about any of that stuff before starting the project. And so the first thing that I needed to do before I did anything else was to develop a strong understanding of all the different types of disciplines that they offered classes in. Mm-hmm. And then also not only understanding that, but understanding what made that particular gym's philosophy and their teaching approach unique. Because it just didn't make sense to me to even start writing a word of content until I understood that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, just to kind of shorten that up, I would say research, you know, would be the next thing that I would dive into. And then after that, just kind of continuing to build out your order of operations, I would start personally, like if I were approaching this from an SEO driven
mm-hmm.
type of content marketing approach, I would start with some very broad keyword research,
mm-hmm.
Just jumping into your keyword tools and just building just a giant set of keywords that are all related to, to the business, the industry, to the problems and the pain points that your content marketing is ultimately going to need to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would start from there. I would start prioritizing those based on opportunity and need. And what I mean by that is there's likely going to be some keywords that are very difficult to rank on, but are very important to that business.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also likely to be a much broader set of keywords that you can consider low-hanging fruit,
long-tail keywords. Yeah,
yeah, the long-tail keywords that are maybe being underserved right now, where you can find some opportunity to get an easy foothold with your content and start getting some SEO wins right off the bat. And so I think that it would make sense to have a healthy mix of both. Like maybe I don't think it's necessary to have a real specific number between the two, but maybe like you can divvy it up to where you're spending 10% of your time on the really difficult keywords, maybe 20% of your time on keywords that are maybe a little bit of a stretch, but aren't quite as difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then spending the rest of your time
on the long,
you know, really focusing on the long tail, because that's where you're going to get the best results most quickly.
So once you're done with these basic initial steps and you are close to producing the content, the actual content mm-hmm. that's going to, you know, power your content engine. Now, yep. These days people consume contents in various formats like video, audio, text. Like earlier it was just text and, you know, you splash it around with few images and you're done. But now it's like video, audio, even email newsletters, mm-hmm. infographics. So when you're deciding on the content marketing plan, how do you decide on which content formats that you will be using for that specific business? Like, do you focus on just 2-3 of them, or you go all out and build everything, which is obviously time consuming and costs mm-hmm. more, right?
Yeah, that's also a great question. And so I think when you're determining like which content types or formats or channels to target immediately, I think it what makes the most sense is to look at, you know, where is that business's audience at right now, you know, and where is the most opportunity for you to be able to get in front of the right people. I think in a lot of cases, and it's certainly not, maybe not necessarily true across the board, but a safe initial assumption would be you know, once you've done like your keyword research, and you can broaden your definition of keyword research to maybe even just be topical research, you know, not necessarily just looking at purely in a keyword sense, but just looking at which topical areas or focuses is that customer base worried about or concerned with. Mm-hmm. But I think in a lot of cases, especially if you're creating a WordPress site, I think, you know, the content that's on your website, the content that's on your blog and the SEO strategy around it is probably going to be relevant. Mm-hmm. And that will probably be like a core focus for you long term. But not necessarily. I think it would make sense to look at what, like, your keyword data will tell you that much, you know, most likely, at least for SEO. From there, though, I would just really spend some time, like, just researching the channels that are out there and just seeing where is the action at right now. You know, like, you could scope out some of their competitors. Like, you could look at their social media profiles, you know, like, look at all the most popular networks and see, not only do your competitors have a presence, but does that presence seem to be active?
Yeah, just like a fashion business would work more on Pinterest, Instagram as compared to LinkedIn, whereas a corporate business would work more on LinkedIn, Facebook rather than Pinterest mm-hmm. or even Instagram. Like,
yeah, for sure. And like, that's a great example too, because like with a fashion business, it's entirely possible that they might care about Instagram and Pinterest way more than they care about organic search potentially.
Yeah.
And so I think that really highlights the importance of, you know, tailoring whatever you do to what makes sense for that business and that their vertical. And I think too, like, you could also, like, you could see, like, do your competitors have a YouTube presence? Are you able to discern whether they have an active email list? Could you even, like, get on their email list and, like, spy on what their copy looks like, or what kinds of content or offers are they sharing there?
People do that often, actually.
oh yeah, totally. And I think it's kind of an open secret that everybody's doing that to everybody, you know? You know, I wonder if you're getting, like, if you want to, like, get even broader than that, it's
okay. So, you know, once
anywhere.
So once you've decided on the content format, the second step is, like, how much content needs to be published over a period of time, like one piece per week, two pieces per week. Are there any do's and don'ts that you follow in this regard for different businesses?
The only don't that I think I would offer up just across the board is don't try to bite off more than you can chew right away.
Yeah.
Because I think that will lead to just poor results and a lot of frustration. And I think just maybe as just a general piece of guidance, the amount of content that you actually need right off the bat might be less than what you think. I would focus on quality over quantity. Personally, mm-hmm. I know I have heard arguments to the contrary, and I do think that those arguments are valid in some cases.
Yeah, there are two schools of thoughts, like write big mm-hmm. articles but less number, like, or others are like write less smaller articles with focus on mm-hmm. long tail, you know, end of the tunnel keywords, so that you can get at more different varied kind of an audience. So there mm-hmm. are two schools of thoughts, and each everyone who believes in one thought sticks to that.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And again, I think that could be some of my own bias coming out too, mm-hmm. Because that's what's worked at CoSchedule. Like, for sure, like, CoSchedule has always and continues to really go hard after that quality versus quantity approach. But in some industries or with some audiences, you know, a higher volume of, you know, maybe more sharply pointed but, like, fairly brief pieces of content might be better. Mm-hmm. So it just depends. But when you're first starting out, though, mm-hmm. I think that even if you want to work your way up to more of a high quantity approach, it might still make sense to just kind of pace yourself in the beginning while you're figuring out what works and what doesn't.
And when you're publishing this content, before that, for how long period do you do the content planning? Like, you do you plan just for a week or a month or a quarter, or you just plan it for a whole year for a specific business that we're going to publish XYZ post on January, then February, March? Like, what is the maximum, you know, time period you plan for the content?
Sure. I certainly wouldn't plan any longer than a year.
Okay.
You know, I don't think that that would make it make much sense. But you don't necessarily have to plan that far out. I mean, right now at CoSchedule, we typically plan our content in like quarters throughout the year.
Yeah, that's kind of industry standard. Most people do that.
Yeah. I think that's probably the easiest way to
business to people understand the quarter, you know, magic.
Yep. So if you're talking to a business owner, you're already speaking their language if you say like, well, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, and so forth. But you could even break it down into being like say when you're just very first starting out and you really have no idea what's going to work and what isn't, it might make more sense to be like, let's try to just plan a month. Let's just do a month. And within that month, let's mix up our schedule with a few different things. Because I feel like right off the bat, like what you're really looking for is just like a spark, you know, just something that seems to get even just the slightest bit of traction, just to kind of give you an idea of what works. And then from there, I think like your strategy's got to be really iterative, you know, like you build on your successes, you learn from your mistakes, and you're just making very rapid adjustments to your strategy on the fly. And so one downside I could see to planning too far ahead too soon would be you might get yourself overly committed to a strategy that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But if you set a certain expectation with a business owner that you are going to do X content for 3 months, you might have to exhaust everything that you had planned for that 3 month period before you can, you know, refresh your content strategy and try something else. So I guess to maybe more neatly summarize it, I would keep it very simple and maybe a little bit more short term, like in the very, very beginning, assuming you're starting from scratch. And then maybe you work your way up to like you know, like a quarterly schedule. And then as far as like doing things like annually, what I think makes sense annually is if there are certain events that you know you will need content for over the course of a year, like say like if you have particularly busy buying cycles throughout the year that like you already, like your business already knows that like maybe you're going to be really busy in the summer, or you know that you're going to need a Black Friday sale or something of that nature. Or if there are particular holidays or things like that that are big with your audience, and like maybe you can just assume that when the time comes, you'll need to have something for those things. But again, like it depends on your industry. Like if your industry moves really quickly and the trends move really quickly, you might not be able to accurately predict what someone's going to care about in a year. So I would start small and then work your way up just based on common sense, really.
Okay, so now let's talk about content creation. Like most people, as we've discussed, like most business owners, time and money, you know, keeps them back from creating content. So if someone is more adamant, like a business owner, he wants to create his own content vis-a-vis hiring a professional, like based on your experience, do you recommend business owners just to focus on the business and not create the content and just hire a professional?
Yeah, there's, I feel like I kind of have a two-part answer to that because I think it depends. And I feel like the immediate response to so many things with content marketing, I feel like opens up with, well, it depends, but not to pull out a cliche, but also to pull out a cliche, I would say it depends. I would say that it depends on how skilled that business owner is at creating content. You know, like if you have like a business owner who just straight up can't write, they probably should not be allowed anywhere near your website or anything that's like a customer facing piece of communication.
Mm-hmm.
I think another concern with that too, is if they get too bogged down in content creation, are they going to be able to adequately focus their resources on other areas of the business where they really need to be? But then again, I think too, it depends on the type of business. Like when CoSchedule started, which would have been in 2013, our CEO had to be involved in creating content, but he was in a position where he had a strong understanding of the audience, the product, you know, the industry and all that, but also has the ability to communicate in writing. Like he knew enough about marketing at that time to where he could do the work.
Mm-hmm.
But if in your business or in the client's business, if the CEO is someone who, you know, if it's just obvious that they have no business, like if it's going to be detrimental to them, then you might need to have a conversation of being like, okay, I know you really want to do this, but consider the opportunity cost. You know, what will you not be able to do elsewhere in your business because you're focused on content? With that said, if the budget doesn't exist to hire a professional, then your decision's made for you. You know, yeah. Like either they have to do it or you have to do it. But I think that maybe in that case, it would make sense to set the expectation that that is how content will be approached up until the resources are available to hire somebody who can take it on. And maybe part of that conversation too is just, you know, content marketing is always going to work best when you have people who are focused on it, you know, not people who are dividing their attention in five different directions. So maybe if you can frame it in terms of, you're not trying to like block that business owner from doing something. You're not trying to take something away from them,
mm-hmm.
but trying to like reorient their focus to, understand that you will get the best results on the things that you are most focused on, and the fewer things that you are focused on, the better each of those things is going to turn out. Because cool. Like a business owner is probably, they're doing way too much stuff,
yeah.
most likely, to do content well for the long term. Yeah, maybe at first, but not long term.
Because my question came from the fact, like when you talk to small business owners, I'll just write it myself, no big deal. You know, you hear this yeah. kind of an argument a lot of times, and you think in your head, oh, really? You probably don't know what you're getting into. So
yeah,
really great answer. So let's now talk about content marketing tools and how you analyze the whole thing. Now, for me, I generally use Google Excel sheets for all kind of content ideas, follow-ups. You know, I'm always in my Google suite, like building Excel sheets, Google Docs. And but you being an expert and being in this field, which content marketing tools do you recommend for someone who is just starting out and someone who has more budget, like for two different audiences?
Sure. So I think that you're definitely like a lot of people, like honestly, probably like pretty much everyone in using, you know, spreadsheets in the Google suite or something comparable to the Google suite. For doing a lot of planning and at least for getting started. And the upsides to using things like spreadsheets is you already have them, you know, like they're free, or maybe you're paying for a premium tool that you're going to use for other purposes too. Like, especially like if you're paying for like G Suite, like a business account, and they're flexible. You know, like you can kind of make them look the way you want, and you can plan things, you know, the way that you want them to look. Where I feel that spreadsheets run into problems very quickly is one, spreadsheets tend to only make sense to the person who actually created them. So as soon as you have a team involved, another person could look at your spreadsheets and be like, I can't make heads or tails out of this. Even if things are very thoughtfully planned and like, you know, where everything's at, another person, it might take them some time to wrap their head around it.
This is so true. I make all kinds of colors in different columns and rows, but only I understand those colors.
I think another hurdle to relying on spreadsheets too much is, they're not really made for marketing planning purposes. There's no real automation there. There's a lot of manual upkeep. They take time in themselves to manage. And so what happens is that you spend time managing the tool that is meant to be helping you manage your time. And it just becomes a vicious circle.
What do you suggest going beyond Excel sheets?
Sure. And so what I would suggest doing going beyond, first, like you have to have the budget available and you have to maybe have enough people involved to really like maybe feel like it's time for you to justify moving up. Like there's certainly nothing wrong with using like spreadsheets when you're starting out. But once you have the ability to do so, I mean, just like realistically, once you have the ability to do so, I would definitely look at using some sort of more dedicated software solution. And I'll say like straight up, like this is a biased opinion because I work at CoSchedule and this is what we do. You know, this is exactly the problem that we solve, at least in like a content marketing context. But I'll throw it out there as long as it's okay to do so. I would recommend CoSchedule as a solution for that, for like planning like your editorial calendars and managing your workflows and so forth. But I wouldn't be telling you anything that you couldn't learn with a quick Google search anyway, that there are other apps out there too. And there are other software solutions that do some of the same things. And again, I'm biased. I would say they don't do everything that we do. But I mean, obviously, like I think any rational person hearing that's going to take it with a grain of salt because of who it's coming from. But I will also say like, I honestly believe that and would be, I would be willing to stake my reputation on that statement for sure. So I would recommend switching to CoSchedule or failing that, you know, just whatever it is that you learn that you prefer, because obviously you've got to use the software that you're comfortable with if you're going to be successful long term.
So that was tools for planning, and
yep.
Most of the content that gets published, it's on a website. It can be a WordPress website. It can be a Wix or Squarespace. It doesn't matter. Now, once the content is published, you need to spread that content over social media channels. Now, what is your recommended tool set for, you know, spreading it to the social media channels other than CoSchedule?
Other than CoSchedule. sure. So CoSchedule does, it solves for that as well.
Guess what? I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So for the distribution side, aside from that though, I mean, if you were looking at just a dedicated social tool, Buffer is always a good option for that. What's great about Buffer is it's pretty low cost, but it's gonna, if social distribution is just what you're looking for, it does a good job of solving for that. And I think particularly with a small business client, what's going to be appealing about that is it's not a massive investment for them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, like whatever, you know, tool set or feature set Buffer provides that already exist in CoSchedule, right?
A lot of it, yeah. And we also integrate with Buffer as well, chose to integrate. So, yeah.
So besides social media spread, the other important thing is SEO analysis, because you got to measure the performance, like from SEO point of view. So which SEO tools do you get in the mix of content marketing to understand the, you know, SEO value or SEO performance of your content that you've been pumping out?
Sure. So, and again, this is an area where you're going to have your choice of some free or freemium tools and some more powerful paid options.
Mm-hmm.
I think to get started,
mm-hmm.
I would recommend that, I'm going to assume if you're creating a website, you are connecting Google Analytics to that site. And if not Google Analytics, then maybe something comparable to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would also look at Google Search Console, which is free, and you can get a lot of powerful information out of that just regarding your overall SEO performance. And then also, this would be going back to like the keyword research phase, but if you need a keyword research tool to get that data, the AdWords keyword planner from Google is okay as a free option. The data that it provides is not always super useful for SEO because it'll give you like difficulty and volume data that's just based on pay-per-click. And mm-hmm. so it's just based on what people are bidding for. But if you have nothing else available to you, it's good enough to get started. Ubersuggest and what's the other one? There's a bunch of like free keyword research tools that have honestly gotten a lot better than what free keyword research tools used to be. I think keywordtool.io
mm-hmm.
is one. It's been a while since I've played around with them, but if you start with those, you can find some useful options there as well.
So this is about the SEO measurement and all that. What about the overall measurement of your content marketing performance? Because you need to show results in terms of actual figures to your clients, right? So besides the increasing sales conversions, what are other metrics that you analyze and track, and which tools do you use for that?
Sure. If it's okay, I'll take like a half step back just to talk about some premium SEO tools too, because mm-hmm. that'll tie into like content and things like that as well.
Okay.
When you're ready, I think if you're ready, or even like if you have the budget to actually buy some SEO software, our preferred tool at CoSchedule is Ahrefs.
Yeah.
Moz is also a very popular, like, nearly industry standard option as well. SERPstat is another. I feel like I've been hearing a lot more about them lately, but I played around with their tool set as well, and that's another good option out there. But there are tons and tons and tons of different, I guess what you would call like all-in-one SEO software suites that have a lot of powerful measurement features in there. And I think for content too, Ahrefs can certainly do a lot. Like Moz can certainly do some things in terms of understanding how your content's performing in terms of like your keyword rankings and the amount of traffic it's bringing in and so forth. Sort of like content, like analysis or in the broad sense, really what the tools that we use, one would be Ahrefs and Google Analytics for sure. We also use KissMetrics for understanding how well content is converting. You know, how well is that content helping us generate email subscribers? How well is it helping us generate leads? How many of those leads are starting trials? Because trials would be important for us because we're a subscription-based software business. Mm-hmm. How many people are contacting our sales team for demos as a result of having read or consumed a particular piece of content, or after getting onto our email list or a certain piece of content? If you don't use KissMetrics, I'm not super familiar with the competitive landscape and like that content analytics space, because KissMetrics is just the tool that we use internally.
Okay.
I think Mixpanel is one that I've heard that I don't have experience with personally, but It's one that I have seen. It seems to be well liked, I think, or it's kind of up and coming. But I would look. I would look for a tool that, like, whatever that tool ends up being, like one that actually helps you focus on measuring the actual impact of your content beyond just, is it ranking? Is it getting traffic? But like tools that tell you, are you generating email subscribers? Are you generating leads? Are you actually helping? Is your content actually helping move people down the funnel and getting them closer to making a purchase?
And nowadays, how important or significant it is paid advertisement in your whole content marketing mix? Is it like the big chunk, or you still rely more on organic, you know, traffic coming in?
Sure. Yeah, that's an awesome question. And again, it's one where I feel like it would be hard to provide one blanket answer across the board.
It would depend on the budget of the client as well, like how much they are interested in investing, because it will cost them more upfront, because paid advertisement also doesn't give returns immediately. It's a slow process, at least obviously faster than the organic one, but it's still a slow process. Like a lot of people have said, like, we burn $100 every day for a week and you don't get any result. Oh, I'm done with it. But you got to do it for a month or 2 months to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think, like, again, I mean, it's with the paid side of things, like, you run into a lot of the same struggles as you do on the organic side. You know, like, you have to be willing to invest up front and eat some of that cost without necessarily seeing a return right away before you can get a return. But I think in terms of, like, what percentage or maybe what chunk of your focus should go toward paid versus what should go to organic. I think my initial thought on that question, or like my philosophy personally, would be really dependent on how effective your organic efforts are. And also how much budget do you have? Because if you don't have to pay for advertising, then, you know, like, don't spend money you don't have to spend, you know, for sure. But at the same time, like, even if your organic content marketing is successful, you don't necessarily want to put all of your eggs just in that one basket, so to speak. Like, I mean, if the budget is available and you're able to see a return on it, maybe start small. Like, again, just like it, just the same way as, like, if you're starting with organic content marketing, with the paid side, just start small and just kind of, like, try to, like, test to, like, see what kinds of copy or what kinds of design, what types of messaging resonate with people and seem to get, like, at least a small indicator of an early return, and then just double down on what's working. Find out another thing that's working, double down on that. Find another thing that's working, double down on that. And just keep iterating until, you know, you're able to build it up in a way where you're hopefully minimizing the amount of budget that you just have to burn. And hopefully that'll help you get to a point where your advertising is making money instead of losing money. Maybe for an example of what that looks like, once that practice has kind of reached maturity, at one company that I worked with in the past, they're literally like effectively there was no budget, like no limit to the budget rather for pay-per-click. It was as long as pay-per-click kept making money, just keep shoveling more money into it. As long as, you know, like, your return on ad spend and the actual amount of money that you're making off of it, as long as that's, like, substantially outpacing the amount of money that's going in, just keep pushing it up, you know, because that's, you're making money, you know, doing that. And, like, that's kind of your entire goal.
So. But that's a rare setup, right?
it's not common. I will say that for sure. But, I mean, that's kind of like a dream state, you know, like, end goal that you might be able to work your way toward, like when you're thinking about from beginning to end, what does that process look like over a span of multiple years?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can potentially achieve. You know, I mean, that's a reason to, you know, to stick with it. But, you know, I would say just start small and just maybe give it at least a few months, you know, just get comfortable with the idea that, yeah, maybe you have to spend $100 a week. You don't see anything right away. You just kind of have to just train yourself to understand that as long as that's not your last $100 in the bank, maybe that's okay. And just while you're doing that, I think it's really important that you don't just be like, okay, we'll do this for 3 months. Like, let's just turn these ads on, just keep the money flowing. And then when it's done, we'll take a look. Like, make sure you're keeping an eye on how it's performing and make changes along the way. Like a strategy that is based on like rapid iteration, I think is what you need.
And I've heard, and I've noticed this, like big companies don't review these things at least for a few months and they will just keep on doing it. Whereas a smaller business are more, you know, conscious about money spent and they will want you to review at least after a week or 10 days. Hey, it's not working. Do something, tweak it, you know, target some other keywords. That's very important. Like, because for smaller businesses, money is even more important as compared to big businesses because they have the, you know, cushion of big money. So let's shift gears now and let's talk about your toolbox. So what are your current 5 favorite tools that power your online life or online business?
So I'll take the obvious one off the table right away, because we do use CoSchedule to run like a significant portion of our content marketing operation runs through CoSchedule. I mean, that's how we manage our calendar. It's how we manage our publishing cadence.
And let me tell you, like my perception about CoSchedule was it's just a tool like Buffer who does, social media spreading and that's about it. But when I went to your site, it does way more than that. I'm just talking about my perception and I'm sure there are a lot of people who have that perception. I don't know why, but.
Well, I think that my theory is that at one time, so when CoSchedule started in 2013, it started life as a editorial calendar WordPress plugin where you could manage your blog publishing and your social promotion like within one plugin.
Yeah.
And that perception has lingered because we've been building out the product and just like developing at just such a rapid pace over like the last half decade that it just takes people some time, you know, to catch up. You know,
like me.
Like if the last time that someone had maybe heard about CoSchedule maybe 3 or 4 years ago, the product today would it has those core functions still that it had back then. Like it's still effective for those things, but it's also like grown so much farther beyond that. But I'll leave that at that. I don't want to take up the whole time basically, hyping us up too much, but, so top 5 tools, Ahrefs, I would say is number one. That's probably the next tool I spend the most amount of time in. Because our content marketing strategy, just in our particular circumstance at CoSchedule, is very SEO driven. And I have found that of the tools that I've used in my personal opinion, I think that Ahrefs delivers the most power and just the best bang for the buck, you know, for what you get. And they've just been really, really smart about the features that they have added to that product and just the amount of value that they continue to offer. Big fan for sure. It's an obvious one, I feel like, and maybe not like a super exciting one, but like the Google Suite, like G Suite, makes a lot of things possible for us. I feel like it's become something that you kind of take for granted for now, but if you've ever been in a situation where you had to pass like actual Word docs back and forth and try to manage version control that way, it's,
Microsoft Office days, right?
Yeah, and you can still do that like with Office 365, which I actually really like too. Just G Suite is the one we use at CoSchedule. Real time like collaborative editing is one of those things where it's just like, who even cares anymore in some ways, because it's become so normal. But if you can remember back to when that wasn't,
yeah.
I mean, that really is kind of a quality of life thing that I feel like we take for granted. Aside from those, I feel like so much of my life exists in those three things. but as far as like other tools that I really like, personally, for like a lot of like my side projects and side hustles and things, I organize a lot of my notes and research and outlines with OneNote, actually. I've tried all kinds of different note-taking apps, and that's the one that has seemed to stick for myself personally. Evernote is really good too. For doing this like similar stuff. I also really like Simple Note. I keep Simple Note on my phone. Just like if I have ideas, like I have like an idea for a piece of content, or I just like wake up in the middle of the night with like a flash of inspiration, it's really, really easy to just pop that open and just like write it down so I don't lose it. As far as other I feel like something really obvious is going to pop in my head.
Okay, let's continue.
Honestly, I would throw out like KissMetrics.
Okay, let's continue.
Just as a, yeah, tools, for sure.
Tools journey, and I'm going to ask you one last question. So any upcoming tool or service that has caught your attention, other than the next new feature in CoSchedule?
Mm-hmm. New tools. There haven't been, that's a really good question. I can't believe that'd be the question of all things that I get stumped on, but there's not really anything that I can like really think of off the top of my head.
Maybe a new app on your phone.
New app on my phone. It's not, and maybe it's like loosely correlated with content marketing. I've been a big fan of Pocket Casts. I think that's been my, like I spend a little bit of time trying to find a good podcast app.
Mm-hmm.
And it costs a little bit of money for like the premium version, but I found it's just completely worth it. Mm-hmm. What I like about Pocket Casts is I like having a really strong desktop app in addition to a mobile app. And they've done a really good job of keeping the experience between desktop and mobile like very comparable to one another. And it's just like super clean and just like works really well. So that's been one for sure. I mean, that kind of settled
let's settle for a
long journey of finding a good podcast app.
Let's settle for one only. So before we wrap this episode, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. You can find my professional account at Ben_CoSchedule.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a personal account that I don't really talk about marketing so much on, just like at Ben Saylor, just like all one word. You can find me in either of those places. You can find me on LinkedIn pretty easily. Or if you want to reach out by email, just ben.saylor@coschedule. If people, I get a lot of spam, but if people ask, if anybody who emails with, like a genuine question or like genuinely wants to open up a conversation, I answer everybody. My DMs are open on Twitter as well. So I think I'm pretty available on the internet if anyone wants to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben, for your time.
Thank you. This is great. I did.
Have a good day.
Yeah, you as well.
You can join the free web creators community to learn and share with other web creators at webcreatorsgroup.com. And for more goodness, just head over to smartwebcreators.com. And remember, be smart, keep creating. See you next time.